Well, it's the 16th day of February, and we're so happy you could all join us today for our second day of our travel article on enchanting French Polynesia. And I have two interesting guests with me in the studio today.
Carolyn.
And Peter. Thanks for having me, Linda.
Thanks for being here, both of you. And I am Linda. And we're so glad that you could join us today. We're like leaving for Polynesia right after this, so stay tuned.
Can't wait.
Well, let's. We started talking about Taikoo yesterday. It's away from really the main action place. It's known for being quiet and magical and having a lot of silence. And what do you remember about yesterday, Carolyn? What stood out to you?
Well, I really like this idea of staying in an overwater bungalow so that I can just step off of my perch and into the water, put on my snorkel, and swim around with some beautiful iridescent fish that the sunlight just sparkles off of them. I think that just sounds like a really lovely way to spend my day.
Mm-hmm, or my week. How about you, Peter?
Well, we talked about this resort, and they said they have choices, and you can do all sorts of things from learn about Polynesian culture to mountain biking and kayaking. So you can have a fun vacation as well as relax.
Right. There are a lot of things that you can do from, as Carolyn said, snorkeling to mountain climbing even. And also you can go to Bird Island, which is... we talked about yesterday is a Galapagos-like sanctuary. And remember, Galapagos is a group of islands off of Ecuador that is a sanctuary for species that haven't been invaded by touched by the outside world, so they've stayed the same for centuries. And here, this is a bird sanctuary, and they have resident birds and they have migratory birds. I still can't believe they fly this far over the Pacific Ocean.
But maybe they just migrate from other islands in the area.
Maybe. And today we're going to continue our discussion about French Polynesia, and we're going to be moving now from this island group. Remember, this is French Polynesia is made up of five island groups, and there are 118 islands making up these five island groups. And we talked about yesterday that Bora Bora and Tahiti are part of the Society Island group, which is where we're going to be going today. So if you have your magazines with you, why don't you open your magazine to page 31, and we're going to start reading on this page, and we're going to read the whole first left-hand column on page 32 as well.
A dramatic difference. In contrast, Tahiti and Bora Bora's steep volcanic peaks and encircling lagoons beckoned with hiking, rock climbing, first-rate snorkeling, and those famous South Sea sunsets. The ones that paint the sky when the clouds gather over the peaks. And for explorers yearning for variety, the rest of French Polynesia was there, 115 more islands in five archipelagos scattered over 2,123 square miles of Pacific Ocean. The big city thrill of the trip was my day in Papeete, Tahiti's administrative capital, a city alive with energy, shops, and offices. A busy harbor filled with ships, narrow streets clogged with taxis and delivery trucks, and sidewalks crowded with sightseers, snack joints, and fancy store windows displaying everything from women's dresses to office equipment. I'd contemplated mountain biking on the lower slopes of 7,352-foot Mount Orahina, highest mountain on Tahiti, but changed my mind. Instead, I joined a half-day cultural and waterfall truck tour, guided by Tiva, a 12th-generation Tahitian. Tiva's family once owned the valley that was now parkland. but having played there as a child, he knew every creek and gully, bush and flower, he told us, leaving sea level and a lush, flowery forest behind. We drove uphill on a narrow, winding road, heading for the top of the valley. Here we stopped to identify an entirely different set of plants, those typically found above 5,000 feet. Then suddenly the forest parted to reveal rows of waterfalls pouring down each narrow gully.
Well, this is quite a contrast. The title of this section, or today, says a dramatic difference, and there certainly is a big difference from what we were just talking about yesterday, isn't there?
That's right. Yesterday was all about seclusion, enjoying the sights and the waves all by yourself, but today is about people, culture, and the town itself.
Right, and also about mountain biking and hiking.
Mm-hmm. And joining other, I guess, probably a larger tour, a half-day cultural tour.
Mm-hmm. And we see that now, in contrast to Tycho, which is where we were yesterday, Tahiti and Bora Bora have steep volcanic peaks. And, of course, this is a volcano. These are all volcanic islands.
Right. Many of the islands found in this area, in the middle of the ocean, they are all formed by volcanic activity. So these just happen to have those volcanic peaks around them.
Yeah, and I always think of sharp, steep cliffs when I think of volcanic anything. Yesterday seemed a lot more placid or, you know, comfortable, but today is all about the activities. And she says that it beckoned with hiking and rock climbing, and that usually means if something is beckoning, it's calling you, it's attracting you to do that thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, we didn't leave snorkeling behind. It also says first-rate snorkeling.
Yes, so this isn't just your average snorkeling. This is first-rate, so top of the line. Probably some of the best snorkeling you could experience.
And also those famous South Sea sunsets. It says here the ones that paint the sky when the clouds gather over the peaks. So, Peter, can you paint us a picture of this?
Wow. Well, so when we look at a sunset, we see all these colors, and it almost seems not real, you know? And so she uses this verb paint, paints the sky, and that gives us a real good visual of what's going around. And, you know, the clouds gather over the peaks. It sounds like the clouds are meant to just end up there. I've been in places that have some old volcanoes, and usually since they're so much taller than the area around them, and usually the air is quite moist, volcanoes will produce their own clouds. And so it naturally happens where kind of a set of clouds will just sit right on top of the peak. It's quite I'll use the word enchanting. We've been talking about that word today. It's quite something to see.
Okay. And if you are yearning for variety, I don't think people go on vacation to be bored and to do the same thing over and over and over again. So if you yearn, and that's one of our vocabulary words, it's a great word. It means to desire greatly.
Yes, so you're yearning for variety. You don't want to be bored, obviously. It's vacation. You want to do something fun, exciting, different, and going to a very different location like Tahiti or Bora Bora or Tycho or any of these French Polynesian islands would certainly give you that variety. And there are 115 more islands in addition to the ones that we're talking about in our lesson. And they're scattered over 2,123 square miles of ocean.
Right, which is the size of Europe. Peter?
Oh, well, I was just looking at these two words, you know, beckoned and yearning. And so we have a lot of desire, wanting things in this little paragraph, which I'm sure is true when you're on a wonderful vacation. And usually the word beckon is if from your perspective, it's the other thing beckoning to you, whereas yearning is can be either person, but it's usually you are the one experiencing that desire, where beckon is the desire kind of towards you.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a very good distinction.
Yeah, and so we would say, beckons to me, I yearn for it. So, yeah, the direction is different, to and for.
Right.
We would use different words there.
Right, because we see that the Tahiti and Bora Bora are beckoning us, and we are yearning for variety.
That's right.
Okay. I also want to point out that in Tahiti, about half of the population of French Polynesia live here. And the population of French Polynesia is not that large anyway. So we're not talking about millions of people here. But now she goes to the city, okay? And she said the big city thrill of the trip was this day that she held in Tahiti's administrative capital. And what did she do there, Peter?
Yeah, she went to different shops. She saw the harbor, and she's describing how there are many, many people doing things. And I think for a lot of us, when we see a place, we don't want to see just this dead city. We want to see it vibrant, people buying and selling things and having jobs. We don't want to work, but we want to see other people working, apparently. No, we want to see just the energy of the place.
And this is actually the town, this Papeete, our Papeete, that you have to fly into.
Right, yeah. So this is where you would fly into the airport. So you would have to go through this city at some point in your journey as you are exploring these beautiful islands.
And we see that she's describing this city as alive with energy. And then she goes on to describe the places that are there, the shops and offices, and this is a harbor. That makes sense because these are all islands, and it's filled with ships. I was also reading an article that said that this is a great area for yachts, and there's a lot of huge yachting industry there because that makes sense. It's a luxury area.
Sure, if you don't want to fly there, too, that's a great way to end up in French Polynesia.
Take your yacht.
Okay.
I'll have to remember that. Let me write that down right now.
Take your yacht. And we also see there are narrow streets, and they're clogged with taxis and delivery trucks. If something is clogged with something, what is it?
Well, it's stuck. You're not going to be able to move very well if something is clogged. And usually we would think about maybe a drain or a water pipe being clogged and the water not being able to move through the pipe. But here it's the streets that are clogged, and they're clogged with traffic.
Okay. And a lot of delivery trucks, and we also see that the sidewalks are crowded with sightseers and snack joints and fancy store windows. It's quite a wide variety of places that you can go to, it looks like here.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it would be interesting.
Well, and she's talking about variety this whole time, and she talks about it in different ways, but I'll just point out snack joints and fancy store window displays.
I thought that was an interesting contrast.
And, they contrast each other because a snack joint, a joint is kind of this slang word for it's not special, it's generic, and you would just get something cheaply there, pop in and out of the store. And
I picture like something made out of wood that kind of has an open front, and you know, you just walk up and buy it.
That's
like,
right.
Like you do here. I mean, we have a lot. In Taipei City, we have a lot of tea joints, I guess we could call them.
Yeah.
Next to these fancy store windows.
Yeah, and those would be the opposite of a joint. It would be probably expensive things for the type of people that vacation here. So probably jewelry or other nice dresses and things. So I bet it's kind of fun to window shop there.
Yeah.
Well, or to buy.
okay.
This is French Polynesia, and they are very famous for black pearls as well. So there's a lot of pearl diving that goes on here. That's one of the activities that you can go on actually to do. And also, because it's French Polynesia, I thought this was kind of interesting. They have a whole range, if you're wondering what you're going to be eating, yes, a lot of fish, but also they have a whole range of like cheeses and French items, because the French bring them over with them because it's populated by French people.
Cheese is very important to a French person.
Right. So, you know, there seemed to be, from what I was reading about, that there are a lot of French, you know, you can go to a French restaurant or a lot of things like that also.
Mm. Oh, I bet the food's great.
Yeah.
So you can go to a joint to get a snack, or maybe you can go to a French boutique where they sell specialty food items. And I love this last contrast that we see here, women's dresses to office equipment.
I know, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Oh, so you can shop for dresses if you are a woman, or you can shop for office equipment to make sure that your office is well supplied.
Well, yeah, and I think what she's talking about here is it's not just a place for tourists. There
right.
are normal people living normal lives, and that's also a great part because
right.
you don't feel like it's just this tourist trap.
Right. Well, she said that she contemplated mountain biking. And if you contemplate something, what do you do?
Well, you think about it. And maybe you think about it for a long time or you think about it seriously, but it's something that you consider. So she thought about going mountain biking on the lower slopes of this mountain, Orahina. And this is the highest mountain on Tahiti, but she decided not to go.
Well, it is pretty high, actually, isn't it? 7,352
yes.
feet is not a short mountain.
No.
But notice she was going to go on the lower slopes. And again, we go back to what Peter just brought up, that you have a lot of choices. But instead of doing that, she changed her mind after contemplating doing it. And what did she do instead, Peter?
She went on a half-day cultural and waterfall truck tour. And again, I think she's bringing up how she contemplated one thing and then just, oh, changed her mind. She's trying to tell the reader that there are many, many things to do and it's easy to do them. So you don't need to plan ahead of time and work really hard to figure out what you're going to do and stick to it. You really can just wake up, enjoy the place and go, oh, I think I'll go for a hike. Wait, no, I'm going to go on a cultural tour.
I thought the combination of a half-day cultural and waterfall truck tour. I was like, okay, is it where they can't be together. So you're having a part of the culture, but you're also seeing a part of nature as well here. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me from her description that actually the truck, the waterfall part of the tour was also very cultural because the guide is this guy that grew up in Tahiti, and he's a 12th generation Tahitian. So he knows this area very well, and it, you know, he has ownership over it, as we say, because it's really his.
Yeah, I think as an American, I can't really relate to that 12th generation kind of family. Most of us in America only go back a couple generations, and even here in Taipei, you know, a lot of people didn't grow up here. Their great-great-grandparents weren't from here. So to have that kind of heritage is quite interesting to meet someone like that.
Right. And he knew everything, didn't he, Carolyn?
Yes. And part of that is due to the fact that his family actually once owned the valley that has now become this parkland. And so he gets to give tours of something that was once part of his family's heritage. And it's still really part of his heritage as being a Tahitian. But yeah, he grew up playing there as a child, so he knew every creek and gully. And I love gullies.
okay, so what's
beautiful.
The difference between a gully and a valley?
Well, so a valley is an area between mountains, right? It can be quite large. I think of a gully as being much smaller, and a gully is a very narrow valley with steep sides, and many times it's formed by water.
You know, Carolyn, you're quite the expert on valleys and gullies. Is that because you grew up in West Virginia?
That could be a contributing factor. Yes, I grew up in a valley in West Virginia.
Not a gully. Oh, okay.
No, but there was a lot of water. There are three rivers there.
So we have our valley gully expert here at Studio Classroom. Carolyn.
Yes, thank you.
I thought it was pretty interesting how he was, you know, this is a description the way that she writes this lets you know that he knows everything about this parkland that they're going to. When you say you know every creek, every gully, every bush, every flower, you know, he told us about all of them. So she is really painting a picture of their guide and how familiar he is with the area that he's showing them. It's pretty interesting.
Yes, so he is very, very familiar with the area. And we find that they don't stay in this lovely area with the gullies and the bushes and the flowers. They leave it. They leave the sea level, and they leave behind the lush, flowery forest. Now, if something is lush, then it has a lot of green vegetation. There's a lot of life growing there, and it was a flowery forest. So this isn't just a green forest with trees. This is a forest filled with beautiful tropical flowers.
Okay, and then they left that and they went up a narrow winding road to the top of the valley now, not the gully, of the valley that the gully is in, okay? And then they stopped to identify a whole different set of plants because now they've gone up higher. So when you travel, you know, when you're going up a mountain, you can see that the terrain is changing and also the vegetation is changing. So here we know that they're above 5,000 feet.
Yeah, and that's special because you get to see what's around the beach, but then the climate completely changes. The difference between hill and mountain is actually this type of change. Mountains are high enough that the climate changes the environment, so plants and animals are different. So that's what you see here. It's not just hills. The whole ecosystem changes, which is pretty interesting to see, and I'm sure as a tourist, it's really fun.
And then we see that I like the way that she describes this. The forest parted, okay? So it means they drove into the forest, okay? The forest didn't actually part for them. And inside of this forest, there were rows of waterfalls pouring down each narrow gully. So if you want to paint a picture of this, how would you describe it, Carolyn?
Well, it's very beautiful for certain. So I visualize it as going into this dense, green, lush area. You go between the trees and you look in front of you and there are beautiful waterfalls cascading down the mountains and they're forming narrow gullies. So these tiny, steep valleys and they each have their own individual waterfall. And it just seems very enchanting. I can't think of a better word to describe it, actually. Yeah.
I would say if I painted a picture, it would be cheesy because this wouldn't look real, but apparently it's an actual place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably one of those places we might see in a movie and we're like, does that really exist? Well, we're going to go on now. We're going to go to Bora Bora now, and we're going to see that other options abound there. We've been on Tahiti right now, so we're going to just change islands within the Society Island group.
Options abound. On Bora Bora, the celebrity island, it was all about the South Seas dream. And with a blue lagoon to dive in and 24 deluxe resorts, regional hotels, and guest houses, the possibilities seemed almost endless. No matter where you stayed, you could find a shady spot on a beach, hire a guide to snorkel with the sharks, or take a jeep trip up the mountain.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Now we're on Bora Bora, the celebrity island. Well, I think a lot of us, English speakers, we talk about Bora Bora or Tahiti, kind of synonymous with just paradise. We don't really know where it is. Well, today we do. But usually if you say, what, are you going to Tahiti or something? That just means this beautiful, unreal, wonderful place.
Right, especially if you're from the Midwest. which you're not in the United States, and you're not even near an ocean. And when you talk about a tropical place and fish and what we've been describing, what we described yesterday and what we're describing today, it's totally different than what most people think of.
And this word Bora Bora just sounds exotic
it
to
does,
us.
Doesn't
it's not. It doesn't have a direct English translation, and it doesn't really matter. It just sounds so exotic to us.
Right. And so we get this idea of the South Seas dream. So we have this dream of an enchanting tropical place, and that is Bora Bora. And with a blue lagoon to dive in, we can just enjoy that tropical dream.
And we see that there are a lot of choices. There are 24 deluxe resorts, and there are regional hotels and guest houses. So if you're talking about a deluxe resort, I'm assuming that these are pretty international. Mm-hmm. And I know that this chain, the Pearl Beach Resort Hotels, go across all of these islands. That would be one of the more upscale ones or top-of-the-line ones that they're talking about. I think Carolyn looked it up, and they're like...
In the off-season, they're about $450 a night for one of their rooms. Yeah, so it's not cheap by any means, but I think that it's also a very unique way to spend your vacation and could be quite worth it.
Well, and we see the price ranges here from deluxe resort, that's the highest, to mm-hmm. your regional hotels, which I'm sure are very expensive, but what the range we're talking about is like your middle range, and then the cheaper option is guest houses.
I also saw a dormitory setting, and the price I saw on that was like $1,000, and would be like $30 to $40 a night. So I think if you can get there, there's something for your budget. And no matter where you stay, you have a wide variety of choices.
Well, yeah, usually it's hard to find a spot on the beach. Usually beaches get crowded, or it's hard to find an actually good spot to sit. So this is actually very important. If you've ever gone to the beach, you need to find a shady spot. And here it's pretty easy to see that.
Right. Well, I'm going to go find my shady spot, but I'll have to wait until after tomorrow when we'll finish our third day of French Polynesia. We hope you'll join us. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.